should probably sit in such a way that her back is not to the deities, or to Prabhupada for that matter, but especially to Radha Madan Mohan. We should always be conscious that Krishna is here in the temple. So, somehow or other, Prabhupada instructed us in this. I remember in Los Angeles, our first temple there. Well, no, it wasn't our first temple, but it was our first big temple at Watsika Boulevard. And Prabhupada's Vyasa-san was there, and the deities, Rukmini Dwarkadish, were there. And the men, all young men, would be on one side. And the women, all young women, were on the other side. And there was quite a few devotees. And I remember I was pretty staunch. I knew I wanted to be a brahmachari. It was hard, but I knew I had to succeed. But I could never understand, because we were always taught, you know, your left shoulder to the deities, right? And, you know, you ended up looking at the women, you know, as you were dancing. But that's actually the etiquette. Even while we're dancing, theoretically, that we don't have our back to Srila Prabhupada, or to the deities for that matter. Anyway, I'm just saying some things that I know and have been taught. They may not be followed. We're reading from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, with translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, chapter 7, and called entitled Knowledge of the Absolute, text number 24. Fairly famous verse. Avyaktam vyaktim apanam manyante mam abuddhaya parambhavam ajananto mam avyayam anuttamam. Unintelligent men who do not know me perfectly think that I, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, was impersonal before and have now assumed this personality. Due to their small knowledge, they do not know my higher nature, which is imperishable, not perishable, and supreme. Due to their small knowledge, they do not know my higher nature, which is imperishable and supreme. So Krishna is Vibhu, or unlimited, and we are Anu, or very small. We are equal to Krishna in quality, but in quantity, He is the Supreme Conscious Being, and we're like a spark unto the fire, or a particle of light unto the sun. So we're very small, and it is not possible for the limited individual jiva soul to know the limits of the unlimited Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, we are men of small knowledge, basically. Now, there is a powerhouse, and it is in megawatts. And there's a light bulb, and it's 60 watts, or 100 watts. Now, if that bulb is burning fully to 60 watts, then it's perfect. It knows everything that is within its capacity to know. And it's getting its current so that it can burn from the powerhouse. So similarly, we get our knowledge from Krishna. We get everything from Krishna. Janma Adi Asya Yataha. The very first aphorism of the Vedanta Sutra is that the absolute truth, God, whoever you may call him, simple definition, Janma Adi, he's the source of everything. There's nothing beyond him. Now, the Isha Upanishad explains this principle. The Vedanta Sutra was written by Vyasadeva, and then the further explication of the Vedanta was compiled in the Upanishads, because the Vedanta's sutras are codes, not easy to understand. So he further elucidated in the Upanishads, and there the Isha Upanishad is the first or oldest of the Upanishads, and there it is explained that Om, or Krishna, Om Purnam, Adaha Purnamidam, Purnat Purnam Udachyate, Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Very nice verse. This is the invocation, mantra. But a definition of God is given. He is perfect and complete. He's Purnam. Purnam means complete. So he must, if he's the origin and he's complete, then he must have everything that the creation has. He can't be less than his creation. Then he's not complete. If there's something outside of him, then he's incomplete. So within the creation we find impersonal energy. Everything is energy. Sarvam kalv idam Brahma. Everything is Brahman. So we find impersonal energy, but we also find personal energy. Both are there. We are all individuals. Osama bin Laden is an individual, and George Bush is an individual. That's going to become obvious in the coming weeks and months. So, God must have both aspects. He can't just have impersonality without any individuality. But within our experience, the impersonal energy is predominated over by the person. The glass of water doesn't pick me up and throw me in the glass. I pick up the glass of water because I'm a person. He has no capacity to do anything except for quench my thirst, maybe. But that's Krishna, rasoham apsukonteya. So therefore, in Krishna also, this is logical proof. Sometimes it is amazing why atheists and hedonists cannot understand the existence of God, because it's such a simple proposition if you're willing to look objectively and accept. For example, one of the most basic, simple arguments for the existence of God is the argument of design. You see a rose. Very beautiful. You see a painting of a rose. Your first thought is, who painted it? When you see the real rose, why don't you think, who painted it? There must be a designer. You know there's a designer for the painted rose. You come to a city like Chandigarh. Indians are all aware of Chandigarh being designed by a Frenchman. And it's actually a very good city in many ways. It has big, wide roads. And it was built, you know, a long time ago. So it was designed fairly well in sectors, very logically laid out, whatever. So many other things. So, in the same way, there is a design in the universe. If the sun were 1 degree closer, looks like something like that is happening in Vancouver. It's getting warmer and warmer these days, but maybe it's global warming. Global warming. It's a warning about global warming. But if it were 1 degree farther away, we'd freeze to death. And if it were 1 degree closer, we'd all burn in the frying pan of life. There's a verse. Actually, it's a discussion between Yudhisthira and Yama. And he talks about the frying pan of life. And we're in the frying pan, and the sunlight is the stirring rod or the fire. I don't know. There's a number of comparisons given there. But time is the paddle. Yeah. Okay. So that's. But the point I'm trying to make is that Krishna is Param Brahman. He's the Supreme Person. And just because men of small knowledge can't see it, doesn't make it not true. People say God exists only if I believe in him, but that's ludicrous. If a blind man says, I don't believe in the sun, he's blind. So, Krishna is the Supreme Person, the Supreme Controller, Parameshwar, and there are some very important reasons why we should come to the temple every week, or even more than that. Who can guess? What's the most important reason for us to come to the temple every week? Huh? See other devotees? Yes, that's important. Do you know? Okay, it's a peaceful place. What about you? Why should we come to the temple? Where's that voice coming from? Oh, what'd you say? Yes, yes. But what's really the most important reason we should come to the temple? Okay. Yes? Yes? Shall I tell you? It's your duty to come. It's your duty to come. No matter how much you understand, but Krishna is the Supreme Person. You owe everything to him. It's your duty to come and offer your obeisances and give a donation or do some service or do something positive. What is Bhagavad Gita? What do many people in India say about Bhagavad Gita? What does it teach us? Huh? Teaches us to do our duty, right? Everybody says that. Well, our duty is to come to the temple because Krishna is the Supreme. I'll bet you, if Atal Bihari Vajpayee were here, this temple would be so crowded because every, at least BJP fellow, would know it's my duty to go. If, you know, some demigod came, any great person, but here's the Supreme. It's our duty to go. We need no other reason. There are so many other reasons, and you mentioned many of them. But we need no other reason than to understand that we have a duty. And if you don't do your duty, Krishna says, Yayata mam prapadyante. He's not obligated to do anything for you. Of course, he's very kind. But you never can tell. Those who are worshippers of demigods have been described as less intelligent persons. Antavattu phalam tesham tadbhavati alpa medasam. Medasam means brain substance. Brain substance comes from brahmacharya. Well, it comes from the blood. Semen, urdhvareta. Good brain substance. Informally in India, a brahmachari would practice strict celibacy, even celibacy, they wouldn't see the opposite sex as much as possible. They would avoid, or their training would not give them opportunity. There's one example where, what was his name? His father was a sage. He took him in the forest, brought him up. Huh? I can't hear. Rishyasringa, that's right, Rishyasringa. Yeah, and ladies came before him because the kingdom of Janak, I think it was, right? Was completely, it was under the, under a curse, and there was no water for years and years and years together. So he asked the Brahmins what to do, and they said, if you bring Rishyasringa, the sage, then he can do a yajna and benedict you. And then the king thought, oh, I can't go and get him, his father will curse me. And then they devised a plan to send these ladies to bring him down to the, he was in the forest, to bring him down to the kingdom, to the city. And the ladies went there, and they waited until his father had gone off in the forest, doing some work, doing his ablutions, morning ablutions, whatever. And then they approached Rishyasringa in his cottage, and Rishyasringa was amazed. He said, what kind of men are you? He'd never seen women before. He didn't know. But they trained him up. Then he went down. And he became a great sage as a householder, but the point is that by practice of brahmacharya, one gets very good brain substance. But alpamedasa, someone who thinks that by bribing some demigod. Now, there are many people who just don't know, although there are four great acharyas. All the Vedas point to Krishna as being the supreme. There's Ramanuja, Madhva, Nimbarka, and Vishnu Swami, and even Shankaracharya glorified Lord Krishna as the supreme, ultimately. Although he did give an alternative for his followers, he gave his Sharirak Bhasya, which is impersonal in its teaching, but that was not Shankaracharya's actual philosophy, because he is himself an incarnation of Lord Shiva. Mayavadam asatchasram kalam bodhamuchyate. Something, he would come, mayava vihitam devi, he was telling his wife Parvati that in Kali Yuga I'll take birth and I'll teach a philosophy very close to Buddhism. But he is himself Vaishnavanam Yatha Shambhu. But people who don't want to surrender to Krishna, see, again, irresponsibility. Now, you can bet some of the biggest, you know the biggest cult in North America? Or in the world, probably, but the biggest cult in North America, you tell me. Yeah. They're from America. They just need a few good men. The Marine Corps. They're such a cult. But they're focused. They're fixed. They're trained. Their minds are focused on their work. And that's actually Ekeha Kurunandana. Bahushakahi Anantascha. Those who don't want to become focused on Krishna, they're irresolute. Their mind is many-branched. And some of these people think that they can become happy in the material world. This is the biggest delusion. This is Dukkhalayama Shasvatam. Part of the aggregate which Krishna calls knowledge is to understand Janma, Mrityu, Jada, Vyadi. You can't be happy as long as you're being plagued by these things. You can't be happy. Are any of you happy to get old? All right, do you like disease? Is that really, you know, gee, I wish I could get another disease. It's so much fun. God, oh God. I was trying for cancer and all I got was, you know, bubonic plague. Anybody want to die? Not really. It's actually very hard to commit suicide. Many people attempt it every year, but they just really don't want to die. They want their emotional problems to be solved, but it's not easy. Because we want to live. Everybody in the World Trade Center, they were rushing to get out. It's not like they thought, oh, the building's coming down. I guess they'll have another Marlboro. No, they were rushing to get out. Because they wanted to live. And we all want to live. But we're forced to get old, we're forced to get diseased, we're forced to die, and we're forced to be reborn. So this material world is Dukkhalayam, place of misery. And it's Ashasvatam. No matter how relatively speaking you may find yourself, maybe you live in West Vancouver, or maybe you live in out Marine Drive there, or in Hollywood, or Potomac, or whatever it is. It won't last forever. You know, Prabhupada talks about the big man who's so attached to his house, builds up his house, big, big house, so attached, and then in his next life, he becomes a cockroach in the same house. He takes birth, but he gets to come back to that house, but as a cockroach. Or, like the story, Yeh Hai Zindagi. Any of you see that? What was it? Ashok Kumar? Huh? Yeh Hai Zindagi? How many of you saw that movie? It was actually a very good movie. That guy who made it, he used Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita in it. It was a great story. I gotta tell it to you. This guy was very poor, and, he and his wife were living with their children in a little small place, and he was working in a restaurant. And the owner of the restaurant was always giving him a tough time and chastising him and this and that. And so anyway, somehow or other, he got a hot tip on a lottery. So his wife used to worship little deity of Krishna, and even though we were so poor, she used to put away a little money for Krishna, a few paisa, you know, whatever she could do. So one day he was so lusty that he raided her box and took the money and put it on the lottery. He won. And then You know, it's a story about how then he bought out the restaurant and gave trouble to the restaurant owner who was forced to be employed in his service. And then he got many restaurants, and then he this and that and this and that. And but it didn't turn out so well, because then his daughter, who was taking riding lessons, had an illicit affair with the riding instructor. And his son tried to take his wealth and everything away from him, plotted against him. And every step along the way, Krishna would appear to him. A beautiful form of Krishna would appear to him. An actor, someone played Krishna, and was quoting Bhagavad Gita to him. And, you know, he was always talking back to Krishna. It was so funny, you know. It was, you know, what are you complaining about, Krishna? You're taking money, and you have so many houses all over the world, and, you know, like that. So finally it ends up, he's sick, and there's a strike in his hotels, and, you know, everything's gone bad, and Krishna comes to him, and he's lying in bed, and he's got a chest of medicines, and Krishna says, oh, this has all happened to you? Yeah, this is very bad. Why? Well, what have you got there? Well, this is teramycin, streptomycin, mycin, mycin. Aha, Krishna said, mycin. That was really cute. I think it was distributed, it is distributed by ITV. But those who think they can be happy in this material world are foolish. They're really foolish. You can exist here temporarily and tolerate tams titikshasva bharata. You can tolerate matra sparshas like you tolerate winter and summer. But ultimately you should know that the only solution is to get out of the material world, as much as making a bathroom smell nice is a futile, vain attempt. You should finish your business quickly and get out. It's ludicrous to try and make it smell nice. So those who worship demigods, they're less intelligent because they're trying to be happy in the material world. And you can't. The demigods, there's no demigod who can give you mukti, liberation. None of them promise that. Only Krishna can give you mukti. He's Mukunda, the giver of liberation. And he's Parameshwar. Aham Adir Hi Devanam. He's the source of all the demigods. Lord Krishna in his personal form is here speaking before Arjuna, and still, due to ignorance, impersonalists argue that the Supreme Lord ultimately has no form. Yamunacharya, a great devotee of the Lord in the disciplic succession of Ramanujacharya, has written two very appropriate verses in this connection. My dear Lord, the devotees like Vyasadeva and Narada know you to be the personality of Godhead. By understanding different Vedic literatures, one can come to know your characteristics, your form, and your activities. Janma karma chame divyam. To know Krishna's birth, his form, his activities. Because Krishna is a person, he has activities. And it's our responsibility to know more about him. Supposing, now in India, we have arranged marriages. Right? Now, supposing your father, when you were young, or some of you were young, your father arranged for you to marry a boy. But when you asked, well, what's his name? How tall is he? Do you have a photo? You wanted a little bit of information, and your father told you, I'm sorry, can't give you. You probably wouldn't be very interested in that prospect. At least you want to meet him once. Okay, chaperoned, that's all right. But At least let me look and see. Or Rukmini. She didn't meet Krishna yet, but she heard so much about him. So Krishna has so many characteristics. He has so many activities. How do you expect to develop love for a person you've never taken the trouble to study anything about? Yeah. Oh, I go to the temple. There's nothing to do there. I guess I have to go once a year, take the kids or something. We're Hindus, you know. I'll go. You know. But you should know factually who is Krishna. The more knowledge you develop of him, the more you'll be interested. All right, I said it's your duty to go. That's true. But if you like to do your duty, if you get some pleasure there from reading Prabhupada's books. When I pick up Prabhupada's books and I read about Krishna, I may have read it 10 times before. But it's still ever fresh. I don't say, oh, I've read this before. No. In fact, I recently read that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, our grandfather, Srila Prabhupada's guru, he instructed all his followers that they should read Chaitanya Bhagavat, which is the childhood pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. So many nice stories. He said you should read it 108 times. It gets sweeter every time you read it. Now, you can't imagine something that gets sweeter. There's the law of diminishing return. You know, you see the Sound of Music once. Yeah, it was a good show. You see it twice. Then you see it on television. You know, the fourth time. Fifth time, forget it, you know. That's the material world. But spiritually, the more you chant Krishna's name, the sweeter it gets. Free from offenses. So, you have to understand Krishna's form and activities. This is Yamunacharya speaking. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But those who are in the modes of passion and ignorance, the demons, the non-devotees, cannot understand you. They are unable to understand you. However expert such devotees may be in discussing Vedanta and the Upanishads and other Vedic literatures, it is not possible for them to understand the personality of Godhead. That's from the Stotra Ratna by Yamunacharya. So, chanting the Maha Mantra, especially Iti Shodashakam Nam Nam Kali Kalmasa Nasam. This Maha Mantra is called, there are many Vakyas, many mantras in the Vedas, but this Maha Mantra is especially efficacious in this age. It's always important, but it's especially in this age effective. You'll get very quick results. But you have to take it seriously. You have to do it every day, just like exercise. You know, if you're thinking that, I'll exercise once a week, you know, something like that. Hey, you know, as far as calories go, that one glass of milk has more calories than you can burn off in a, you know, 2 or 3 hours exercise. In other words, you have to do it more often than once a week. You have to actually do it. They talk in exercise, they talk about setting up a routine so that even though you only exercise half an hour a day, you go for an hour's walk or something. Even though you do it only for an hour a day, you set up what's called the training effect. Your body gets accustomed, and so what happens is, if you do this 5 days a week at least, then 24 hours a day, this training effect takes hold of your body and your metabolism. Everything is adjusted properly. If you get, Prabhupada said his morning walk added 10 years to his life. So, similarly, taking the chanting of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. You see, they know how to do it. If you do that every day, then you make very quick progress, and it's not such a big austerity. If you go to a gym or something for weight loss or something, and you tell the instructor, or the instructor tells you, yes, we have a very good program here, and if you follow it for 35 years, I guarantee you'll lose 3 pounds. You know, say, have you got a little bit more advanced program? It's not very hard to chant the Maha Mantra. We should give up our worship. Or, okay, say you don't want to give up worship of demigods. That's also, we can live with that. But you should add the chanting of the names of the Supreme Person, Krishna. Then, Chetodarpana Marjanam, the dust from the mirror of the heart will be cleansed. Then you will be able to see who you are, you will understand who Krishna is, and you will be able to do your duty and come to the temple every week, and even during the week, and for festivals, and your life will be so much happier. And when your mind is fixed, ekeha kuru nandana, then the miseries of material existence will no longer affect you. Pardon me, they'll no longer affect you. I was listening to a tape of Srila Prabhupada in Delhi on a morning walk in 72, 73, something like that, 74. And they were talking about the communists and the capitalists. They were talking about the Americans and the Russians and nuclear weapons. And so there was some kind of threat that there might be a nuclear holocaust. Sound familiar? There's always a threat in the material world. Always a threat. But anyway, the devotees, Prabhupada, if there's a nuclear war, what will we do? And Prabhupada said, we'll chant Hare Krishna. And then a little while later, somebody asked, Prabhupada, if there's a world war, what should we do to prepare for it? And Prabhupada said, you should prepare to chant Hare Krishna. Because after all, life is, material world is temporary. And he said, we have our Mayapur, we have our Vrindavan, we have Sharanagati, whatever. But the main point is that you should prepare Ante Narayana Smriti, Janma Labak Parak Pungsang Ante Narayana Smriti. The perfection of your life will be to remember God at the time of death. And if you take up this chanting process, you are much more likely to achieve success than any other thing that you may endeavor to do. This chanting is simultaneously easy and sublime. So, I will stop there. Are there any questions or comments?
It's weird.
The same thing is like, you buy, like, Mantra is such a popular song, it's been at the top of the hit parade for at least the last 5,000 years. Any other questions? How many people do you think at the time of death think, Geez, I wish I could have gone to the office more. Gosh, I wish I could have got a bigger Christmas tree for my family. So we have to make it a priority in our lives. People tell me all the time, Swamiji, I can't come to the temple because I don't have time. And I get a little disturbed at their foolishness. And what I feel like saying, and sometimes I do say, sir, what you mean to say is that I don't make it a priority to come to the temple. You can't get more time. There's only 24 hours in a day. And I have